Chapter 44. Macrinus, a weaver, to whose house Vinicius was carried, washed him, and gave him clothing and food. When the young tribune had recovered his strength altogether, he declared that he would search further for Linus that very night. Macrinus, who was a Christian, confirmed Chio's report that Linus, with Clement the chief priest, had gone to Ostrianum, where Peter was to baptize a whole company of confessors of the new faith. In that division of the city it was known to Christians that Linus had confided the care of his house 2 days before to a certain Gaius. For Vinicius this was a proof that neither Lygia nor Ursus had remained in the house, and that they also must have gone to Ostrianum. This thought gave him great comfort. Linus was an old man, for whom it would be difficult to walk daily to the distant Nomentan gate, and back to the Trans Tiber, hence it was likely that he lodged those few days with some co-religionist beyond the walls, and with him also Lygia and Ursus. Thus they escaped the fire, which in general had not reached the other slope of the Esquian. Vinicius saw in all this a dispensation of Christ, whose care he felt above him, and his heart was filled more than ever with love. He swore in his soul to pay with his whole life for those clear marks of favor. But all the more did he hurry to Ostrianum. He would find Lygia, find Linus and Peter, he would take them to a distance, to some of his lands, even to Sicily. Let Rome burn, in a few days it would be a mere heap of ashes. Why remain in the face of disaster and a mad rabble? In his lands troops of obedient slaves would protect them, they would be surrounded by the calm of the country, and live in peace under Christ's wings blessed by Peter. Oh, if he could find them! That was no easy thing. Vinicius remembered the difficulty with which he had passed from the Appian Way to the Trans Tiber, and how he must circle around to reach the Via Portuensis. He resolved, therefore, to go around the city this time in the opposite direction, going by the Via Triumphatoris. It was possible to reach the Emilian Bridge by going along the river, thence passing the Pincian Hill, all the Campus Martius, outside the gardens of Pompey, Lucullus, and Sallust, to make a push forward to the Via Nomentana. That was the shortest way, but Macrinus and Chio advised him not to take it. The fire had not touched that part of the city, it is true, but all the market squares and streets might be packed densely with people and their goods. Chilo advised him to go through the Ager Vaticanus to the port of Flaminia, cross the river at that point, and push on outside the walls beyond the gardens of Acilius to the port of Salaria. Vinicius, after a moment's hesitation, took this advice. Macrinus had to remain in care of his house, but he provided 2 mules, which would serve Lygia also in a further ernie. He wished to give a slave too, but Vinicius re-1-aid, judging tilth the first detachment of Praetorians he met on the road would pass under his orders. Soon he and Chilo moved on through the Pagus Janiculensis to the Triumphal Way. There were vehicles there too, in open places, but they pushed between them with less difficulty, as the inhabitants had fled for the greater part by the Via Portuensis toward the sea. Beyond the Septimian Gate they rode between the river and the splendid gardens of Domitius. The mighty cypresses were red from the conflagration, as if from evening sunshine. The road became freer. At times they had to struggle merely with the current of incoming rustics. Vinicius urged his mule forward as much as possible, but Chilo, riding closely in the rear, talked to himself almost the whole way. Well, we have left the fire behind, and now it is heating our shoulders. Never yet has there been so much light on this road in the nighttime. O Zeus! If thou wilt not send torrents of rain on that fire, thou hint no love for Rome, surely. The power of man will not quench those flames. Such a city which Greece and the whole world was serving. And now the first Greek who comes along may roast beans in its ashes. Who could have looked for this? And now there will be no longer a Rome, nor Roman rulers. Woso wants to walk on the ashes, when they grow cold, and whistle over them, may whistle without danger. O gods! To whistle over such a world-ruling city! What Greek, or even barbarian, could have hoped for this. And still one may whistle for a heap of ashes, whether left after a shepherd's fire or a burnt city, is mere ashes, which the wind will blow away sooner or later. Thus talking, he turned from moment to moment toward the conflagration, and looked at the waves of flame with a face filled at once with delight and malice. "It will perish. It will perish," continued he, "and will never be on earth again. Whither will the world send its wheat now, its olives, and its money? Who will squeeze gold and tears from it? Marble does not burn, but it crumbles in fire. The capital will turn into dust, and the palatine into dust. O Zeus! Rome was like a shepherd, and other nations like sheep. When the shepherd was hungry, he slaughtered a sheep, ate the flesh, and to thee, O Father of the gods, he made an offering of the skin. Who, O Cloud Compeller, will do the slaughtering now, and into whose hand wilt thou put the shepherd's whip? For Rome is burning, O Father, as truly as if thou hadst fired it with thy thunderbolt. Hurry," urged Vinicius. "What art thou doing there?" "I am weeping over Rome, Lord, Jove's city." For a time they rode on in silence, listening to the roar of the burning, and the sound of birds' wings. Doves, a multitude of which had their nests about villas and in small towns of the Campania, and also every kind of field bird, from near the sea and the surrounding mountains, mistaking evidently the gleam of the conflagration for sunlight, were flying, whole flocks of them, blindly into the fire. Vinicius broke the silence first. "Where wert thou when the fire burst out?" "I was going to my friend Eurystheus, Lord, who kept a shop near the Circus Maximus, and I was just meditating on the teaching of Christ, when men began to shout, 'Fire!'" People gathered around the circus for safety, and through curiosity. But when the flame seized the whole circus, and began to appear in other places also, each had to think of his own safety. "Didst thou see people throwing torches into houses?" "What have I not seen, O grandson of Aeneas? I saw people making a way for themselves through the crowd with swords. I have seen battles, the entrails of people trampled on the pavement. Ah, if thou hadst seen that, thou wouldst have thought that barbarians had captured the city, and were putting it to the sword. People round about cried that the end of the world had come. Some lost their heads altogether, and, forgetting to flee, waited stupidly till the flame seized them. Some fell into bewilderment, others howled in despair. I saw some also who howled from delight. O Lord, there are many bad people in the world who know not how to value the benefactions of your mild rule, and those just laws in virtue of which ye take from all what they have, and give it to yourselves. People will not be reconciled to the will of God." Vinicius was too much occupied with his own thoughts to note the irony quivering in Chio's words. A shudder of terror seized him at the simple thought that Lydia might be in the midst of that chaos on those terrible streets, where people's entrails were trampled on. Hence, though he had asked at least 10 times of Chilo touching all which the old man could know, he turned to him once again, "But hast thou seen them in Astrianum with thy own eyes?" "I saw them, O son of Venus. I saw the maiden, the good Lydian, holy Linus, and the apostle Peter." "Before the fire?" "Before the fire, O Mithra." But a doubt rose in the soul of Vinicius, whether Chilo was not lying. Hence, reining his mule in, he looked threateningly at the old Greek and inquired, "What wert thou doing there?" Chilo was confused. True, it seemed to him, as to many, that with the destruction of Rome would come the end also of Roman dominion. But he was face to face with Vinicius. He remembered that the young soldier had prohibited him, under a terrible threat, from watching the Christians, and especially Linus and Lydia. "Lord," said he, "why dost thou not believe that I love them?" "I do. I was in Astrianum, for I am half a Christian. Pyrrho has taught me to esteem virtue more than philosophy, hence I cleave more and more to virtuous people. And, besides, I am poor, and when thou, O Jove, Word of Antium, I suffered hunger frequently over my books. Therefore I sat at the wall of Astrianum. For the Christians, though poor, distribute more alms than all other inhabitants of Rome taken together. This reason seemed sufficient to Vinicius, and he inquired less severely, And dost thou not know where Linus is dwelling at this moment? Thou didst punish me sharply on a time for curiosity, replied the Greek. Vinicius ceased talking and rode on. O Lord, said Chio, after a while, thou wouldst not have found the maiden but for me, and if we find her now, thou wilt not forget the needy sage? Thou wilt receive a house with a vineyard at Amiriola. Thanks to thee, O Hercules. With a vineyard? Thanks to thee. Oh, yes, with a vineyard. They were passing the Vatican Hill now, which was ruddy from the fire. But beyond the Naumachia they turned to the right, so that when they had passed the Vatican field they would reach the river, and, crossing it, go to the Flaminian Gate. Suddenly Chilo reined in his mule, and said, A good thought has come to my head, Lord. Speak, answered Vinicius. Between the Janiculum and the Vatican Hill, beyond the gardens of Agrippina, are excavations from which stones and sand were taken to build the circus of Nero. Hear me, Lord. Recently the Jews, of whom, as thou knowest, there is a multitude in Trans-Tiber, have begun to persecute Christians cruelly. Thou hast in mind that in the time of the divine Claudius there were such disturbances, that Caesar was forced to expel them from Rome. Now, when they have returned, and when, thanks to the protection of the Augusta, they feel safe, they annoy Christians more insolently. I know this. I have seen it. No edict against Christians has been issued. But the Jews complain to the prefect of the city that Christians murder infants, worship an ass, and preach a religion not recognized by the Senate. They beat them, and attack their houses of prayer so fiercely that the Christians are forced to hide. What dost thou wish to say? Inquired Vinicius. This, Lord, that synagogues exist openly in the Trans-Tiber, but that Christians, in their wish to avoid persecution, are forced to pray in secret, and assemble in ruined sheds outside the city or in sand pits. Those who dwell in the Trans-Tiber have chosen just that place which was excavated for the building of the circus and various houses along the Tiber. Now, when the city is perishing, the adherents of Christ are praying. Beyond doubt we shall find a countless number of them in the excavation. So my advice is to go in there along the road. But thou hast said that Linus has gone to Astrianum, cried Vinicius impatiently. But thou hast promised me a house with a vineyard at Amiriola, answered Chilo. For that reason I wish to seek the maiden, wherever I hope to find her. They might have returned to the Trans-Tiber after the outbreak of the fire. They might have gone around outside the city, as we are doing at this moment. Linus has a house. Perhaps he wished to be nearer his house to see if the fire had seized that part of the city also. If they have returned, I swear to thee, by Persephone, that we shall find them at prayer in the excavation. In the worst event, we shall get tidings of them. Thou art right, lead on, said the tribune. Chilo, without hesitation, turned to the left toward the hill. For a while the slope of the hill concealed the conflagration, so that, though the neighboring heights were in the light, the two men were in the shade. When they had passed the circus, they turned still to the left, and entered a kind of passage completely dark. But in that darkness Vinicius saw swamis of gleaming lanterns. They are there, said Chilo. There will be more of them today than ever, for other houses of prayer are burnt, or are filled with smoke, as is the whole Trans-Tiber. True, said Vinicius, I hear singing. In fact, the voices of people singing reached the hill from the dark opening, and the lanterns vanished in it one after the other. But from side passages new forms appeared continually, so that after some time Vinicius and Chilo found themselves amid a whole assemblage of people. Chilo slipped from his mule, and, beckoning to a youth who sat near, said to him, I'm a priest of Christ and a bishop. Hold the mules for us. thou wilt receive my blessing and forgiveness of sins. Then, without waiting for an answer, he thrust the reins into his hands, and, in company with Vinicius, joined the advancing throng. They entered the excavation after a while, and pushed on through the dark passage by the dim light of lanterns till they reached a spacious cave, from which stone had been taken evidently, for the walls were formed of fresh fragments. It was brighter there than in the corridor, for, in addition to tapers and lanterns, torches were burning. By the light of these Vinicius saw a whole throng of kneeling people with upraised hands. He could not see Lydia, the Apostle Peter, or Linus, but he was surrounded by faces solemn and full of emotion. On some of them expectation or alarm was evident, on some, hope. Light was reflected in the whites of their upraised eyes. Perspiration was flowing along their foreheads, pale as chalk. Some were singing hymns, others were repeating feverishly the name of Jesus, some were beating their breasts. It was apparent that they expected something uncommon at any moment. Meanwhile the hymn ceased, and above the assembly, in a niche formed by the removal of an immense stone, appeared Crispus, the acquaintance of Vinicius, with a face as it were half delirious, pale, stern, and fanatical. All eyes were turned to him, as though waiting for words of consolation and hope. After he had blessed the assembly, he began in hurried, almost shouting tones, "Bewail your sins, for the hour has come. Behold, the Lord has sent down destroying flames on Babylon, on the city of profligacy and crime. The hour of judgment has struck, the hour of wrath and dissolution. The Lord has promised to come, and soon you will seek him. He will not come as the Lamb, who offered his blood for your sins, but as an awful judge, who in his justice will hurl sinners and unbelievers into the pit. Woe to the world, woe to sinners! There will be no mercy for them. I see thee, O Christ! Stars are falling to the earth in showers, the sun is darkened, the earth opens in yawning gulfs, the dead rise from their graves, but thou art moving amid the sound of trumpets and legions of angels, amid thunders and lightnings. I see thee, I hear thee, O Christ!" Then he was silent, and, raising his eyes, seemed to gaze into something distant and dreadful. That moment a dull roar was heard in the cave, once, twice, a tenth time, in the burning city whole streets of partly consumed houses began to fall with a crash. But most Christians took those sounds as a visible sign that the dreadful hour was approaching. Belief in the early second coming of Christ, and in the end of the world, was universal among them. Now the destruction of the city had strengthened it. Terror seized the assembly. Many voices repeated, "The day of judgment! Behold, it is coming!" Some covered their faces with their hands, believing that the earth would be shaken to its foundation, that beasts of hell would rush out through its openings, and hurl themselves on sinners. Others cried, "Christ have mercy on us! Redeemer, be pitiful!" Some confessed their sins aloud. Others cast themselves into the arms of friends, so as to have some near heart with them in the hour of dismay. But there were faces which seemed wrapped into heaven, faces with smiles not of earth. These showed no fear. In some places were heard voices. Those were of people who in religious excitement had begun to cry out unknown words in strange languages. Some person in a dark corner cried, "Wake thou that sleepest!" Above all rose the shout of Crispus, "Watch ye! Watch ye!" At moments, however, silence came, as if all were holding the breath in their breasts, and waiting for what would come. And then was heard the distant thunder of parts of the city falling into ruins, after which were heard again groans and cries, "Renounce earthly riches, for soon there will be no earth beneath your feet. Renounce earthly loves, for the Lord will condemn those who love wife or child more than him. Woe to the one who loves the creature more than the Creator. Woe to the rich. Woe to the luxurious. Woe to the dissolute. Woe to husband, wife, and child." Suddenly a roar louder than any which had preceded shook the quarry. All fell to the earth, stretching their arms in cross form to ward away evil spirits by that figure. Silence followed, in which was heard only panting breath, whispers full of terror, Jesus, 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 and in places the weeping of children. At that moment a certain calm voice spoke above that prostrate multitude. Peace be with you. That was the voice of Peter the Apostle, who had entered the cave a moment earlier. At the sound of his voice terror passed at once, as it passes from a flock in which the shepherd has appeared. People rose from the earth, those who were nearer gathered at his knees, as if seeking protection under his wings. He stretched his hands over them and said, Why are ye troubled in heart? Who of you can tell what will happen before the hour cometh? The Lord has punished Babylon with fire, but his mercy will be on those whom baptism has purified, and ye whose sins are redeemed by the blood of the Lamb will die with his name on your lips. Peace be with you. After the terrible and merciless words of Crispus, those of Peter fell like a bomb on all present. Instead of fear of God, the love of God took possession of their spirits. Those people found the Christ whom they had learned to love from the apostles' narratives. Hence not a merciless judge, but a mild and patient Lamb, whose mercy surpasses man's wickedness a hundredfold. A feeling of solace possessed the whole assembly, and comfort, with thankfulness to the apostle, filled their hearts. Voices from various sides began to cry, We are thy sheep, feed us. Those nearer said, Desert us not in the day of disaster. And they knelt at his knees, seeing which Vinicius approached, seized the edge of Peter's mantle, and, inclining, said, Save me, Lord. I have sought her in the smoke of the burning, and in the throng of people. Nowhere could I find her, but I believe that thou canst restore her. Peter placed his hand on the tribune's head. Have trust, said he, and come with me. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.